I would like for us to start by having kind of a run through on the book of Genesis. So I'm going to wake you up this morning. I mean, the idea is get you ready for Bob so that no one has any tendency to drift off. I have it so that he's looking and he sees your smiling face and he says, they're not asleep, they're wide awake. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a quick overview of Genesis. Genesis chapters 1 and 2 are creation. Chapter 3 is the fall. Chapter 4, brotherly love. Cain murders Abel. Chapters 5 and 10, genealogies. What's chapters 1 and 2? Creation. Chapter 3, the fall. 4, brotherly love. Cain murders Abel. 5 and 10, genealogies. Chapters 6 through 8 are the flood. Chapter 9 is the Noahic covenant. It's the covenant that God made with Noah where he put the rainbow. By the way, do you know why God picked a rainbow as the symbol of the covenant? Very simple reason. The rainbow looks like that from our perspective, right? And it is the same word keshet that is used for a bow, as in bows and arrows. But when the bow is hanging on the wall, it means you're not at war. God is not at war with man, so he's put the hanging bow as a symbol of his peace treaty with men, promising never to flood the whole earth ever again. So, what chapter is the rainbow? Genesis chapter 9. Okay, well, let's think back. 1 and 2 is creation. 3, the fall. 4, brotherly love. 5 and 10, genealogies. 6 through 8, the flood. Chapter 9, the Noahic covenant and the rainbow. We've already done 10, so I won't tell you that. 11 is the Tower of Babel. Chapter 12, God calls Abraham. And there's going to be a focus on Abraham from Genesis 12 up through 25. Then chapter 26 is devoted to his son Isaac. But Abraham had two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to be looking at Ishmael and Isaac. I believe that Ishmael was a believer. People often think that he was not because he was passed over as far as God's choice. But the interesting thing is, what God said that he was choosing for was the line through which the blessings of Abraham would go. Specifically, the line that was chosen is the line through which Jesus Christ came as Messiah into planet Earth. Genesis told us very early that God would send forth seed of woman, that's Jesus Christ, who would crush the serpent's head. Seed of woman was then narrowed down to the line of Shem. Remember, we've got Noah and the flood, and then we have eight survivors. Noah and his three sons and all of their wives. So there were eight that survived the flood, and that line, the line through which seed of woman would come, would be through the line of Shem. Then God chose Abraham, and the line would go through him, and he told Abraham that in Isaac his seed would be called. You can't have two messianic lines, can you?
No.
So he chose Isaac for the line for the Messiah. Isaac had two kids, Jacob and Esau. And once again, God made a choice that the line of the Messiah would go through one of the sons, and that would be through Jacob. Jacob then had 12 sons and one daughter. You can remember the daughter's name? Who's in the kitchen with Dinah? So he had 12 sons, one daughter. Interestingly enough, all of the children and their descendants would be Israelites. But God still made a choice as to which one the messianic line would go through. Genesis chapter 49 says that why don't we turn to Genesis 49? As long as I'm talking about it, let's go there. The three eldest sons of Jacob were disqualified from having firstborn rights. And as he starts talking about Judah in verse 8, Judah, and the name means praised, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. In other words, he's going to be victorious. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down. He lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter. The scepter is held by a king, and it is his symbol of rulership. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, that's a reference to procreation, until Shiloh comes. Shiloh is normally viewed as a name, but it's actually a very interesting phrase. The word sheh in Hebrew is a form that means who or whom. Le means to, and the O means him. What it's saying is the scepter shall continue through all the generations of Judah. Someone will have the right of rulership until Shiloh come, the one to whom it belongs. Jesus Christ is the one to whom the scepter belongs. So, as we are here, we are looking at God's blessing of two sons of Abraham, Ishmael and Isaac. One of them received great blessing, Isaac. His blessings will ultimately include carrying the messianic line. And God had told Abraham, in Isaac your seed shall be called. The other son, Ishmael, though we're going to see, he also received blessing. Now his blessing that he received was considerably smaller than the blessing that would come to the one through whom the messianic line would carry. But as we consider the topic that was presented for me today, God does bless both Ishmael and Isaac. Let's look first at Ishmael. Genesis chapter 21, verses 1 and 2. God kept his promise to Sarah that she would bear a son to aged Abraham. Verse 21, and the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the set time which God had spoken to him. Let's back up to Genesis chapter 17. This is probably a few weeks back that you were there. But in Genesis chapter 17, as God is visiting with Abraham, he says in verse 21, but my covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, which is an eternal covenant that God made and it will never be revoked. I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this set time next year. So as we're in Genesis chapter 21, we are looking 1 year later. God came back and lo and behold, Isaac is born here. Verse 3, Abraham called his name Isaac. Actually, in the Hebrew, it's Yitzchak. And Yitzchak means he will laugh. And the question becomes, would you name a child he will laugh? I mean, yeah, does that sound like one of the all-time favorite names? Why is it that Abraham named his son this? Well, let's go back to Genesis chapter 17. In Genesis chapter 17, starting at verse 15, then God said to Abram, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. Sarah means princess. Depending on how Sarai is to be translated, a lot of people say it means contentious. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that that's what her name. Can you imagine someone saying when their child is born, wow, I've got a perfect name, contentious. Somehow, I don't think that was her name. I don't think that was the translation of her name. But now she's going to be called Sarah, or princess. And I will bless her, and also give you a son by her. Abraham is 99 years old, and Sarah is no spring chicken here at this time either. And so, I will give you a son by her, then I will bless her, and she shall be the mother of nations. Abraham, if you remember, his name was Avram. Avram, or Abram, meant exalted father. And that's what you call a patronym. It's named after, it's saying that his father, Terah, was exalted. You know, it's sort of like how you have Johnson, Hendrickson, and all the sons. And then in Irish and Scottish, you have the O's, like in O'Brien and so on and so forth, and Mech. Well, all of those mean son of. And it's really Avram was looking back to his father, Terah, saying that Terah was an exalted father. But then God renamed Abraham, or Abram, Avraham. And that's father of a multitude. And he received that name when he was 99 years old and had no children. And the issue was not that he himself was going to have a multitude of children, but through the generations, there would be a multitude as innumerable as the stars of heaven and the sand of the seashore, as God had promised. And out of them would come many nations. Ishmael, we see, is not of Israel. Another nation. Now let's think. Abraham had two sons, Isaac and Ishmael. Only Isaac was of the line that culminated in Israel. Isaac had two sons. He had Jacob and Esau. And once again, Jacob was line of Israel, but Esau is another line, the line of Edom. And then, starting with Jacob, all of his children were of the line of Israel. But there would be a multitude of nations that would come as a result of Abraham. So the promise was he would be a father of many nations, and Sarah, here in this verse, is also said to be the mother of many nations. And so, verse 16, she shall be a mother of nations, kings of peoples shall be from her. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed. He said, my God is a wonderful joke teller. And he said in his heart, he didn't dare say it out loud, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? But in the following context, our English Bibles read, is anything impossible for God? But I love the Hebrew. I think the Hebrew is much more picturesque than is anything impossible for God. It is anything too wonderful for the Lord? And, you know, when God has a surprise birthday gift, he really outdoes himself. So, Abraham laughed, and it doesn't look like his laughter was one of faith. Now let's look at Genesis chapter 18, and we'll see that God is an equal opportunity employer. He allowed Sarah the same chance also to laugh. And so in Genesis chapter 18, verse 12, I will back up to verse 9. As the Lord and two angels were visiting with Abraham, they said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? So he said, here, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, that is a year later. And behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him. They didn't have very good soundproofing in tents in those days. I don't think she was eavesdropping. I just don't think there was any way that she was going to avoid hearing with those thick tent walls. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the time of childbearing. Therefore, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being old also? The Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I surely bear a child since I am old? See, the Lord was eavesdropping too, wasn't he? Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? More literal translation, it's the word pale. At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. But Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he said, no, but you did laugh. Both of them laughed in unbelief. But now look at the time when they name Isaac. In chapter 21, verse 6. And Sarah said, God has made me laugh, and all who hear will laugh with me. This is now a reminder that their laugh of unbelief is a laugh of belief now that all can share in as they recognize what God has done. God made promises to Abraham. God said that his seed would be called through Isaac. He named him father of a multitude, and he said that he was going to be the father of a multitude of nations, and it wasn't going to be through Hagar. It was going to be through his wife Sarah. God has much at stake, and therefore, God has to keep his promises. One of the things I love about the text of our Bible is that God is a God who keeps his word. If you think back to Hebrews, and when Bob Hayes was in his Hebrews series, and I spoke for him one time on Hebrews series in chapter 12 for him, something very interesting in Hebrews chapter 11 says that all these patriarchs died in faith without having received the promises. How is it that we can say that God is one who keeps promises if all those people died without having received the promises? God resurrects and grants everlasting life to believers. And it is by that, when Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all believers who have gone to be with him are resurrected, that God will keep his promise. Everlasting life and resurrection is fundamental to how God keeps his promises. So, God is going to keep even more promises than he has made here. Right here in this context, he said, even though you're old, 1 year from now, you're going to have a son. And that indeed happened. But God keeps all of his promises. So, let's skip back to what I passed over in verse 4. Abraham circumcised Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. The sign of circumcision was commanded by God for Israelites, starting in Genesis chapter 17. And it was to be a sign of their part of the nation that God had promised that he was going to establish through Abraham. It's not a requirement for Gentiles, but it was a requirement for Jewish boys at age 8 to be circumcised. Abraham obeyed the command. Verse 5, we're told that Abraham was 100 years old at the time that Isaac was born to him, which means, according to the chronology that I accept, which is the one done by Eugene Merrill of Dallas Seminary, this would be the year 2066 BC, because Abraham was born in 2166 BC. Starting with Abraham, we have fixed dates where we are able to determine when things happened. So then Genesis 21 verse 7, Sarah expressed amazement at giving birth in her old age. She said, "Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? For I have borne him a son in his old age." In verse 8, Abraham hosted a great feast the day that Isaac was weaned, and I have here a few things on the notes. Abram was 86 years old when Ishmael was born, according to Genesis 16:16. He was 100 years old when Isaac was born, so that means at the time of Isaac's birth, Ishmael would be 14 years old. Weaning tended to happen between age 2 and 3. So Ishmael, at the point of this passage, is 16 or 17 years old. And so in this passage, there's a great feast. There's a big party being hosted by Abraham at the time of Isaac's weaning. So in verse 8, so the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the same day that Isaac was weaned. In verse 9, Sarah saw Ishmael, Hagar's son, mocking Isaac. Now, I make note here that the word scoffed that shows up here is mesachech. It is from the verb sachach, which means to laugh. Now, the name Isaac, as we pointed out, Yitzchak, is he will laugh. And if we think back, both Abraham and Sarah laughed in unbelief. Then she made a prediction at the point that he was born that people would laugh with her in faith because of the birth of Isaac. But now in this passage, this is not a laughter that is in belief. This is, shall we say, Ishmael is taunting Isaac and thinks that he's acting ridiculous like a little child, and he's making fun of Isaac. And you know how Mama Bear is when someone goes after her cub. Well, that's exactly what happens here in this passage. Verse 9. And Sarah saw that the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, scoffing. Now, I have to tell you, family relations, as you look in the book of Genesis, weren't something to write home about. You can imagine what it was like for Abraham having two women in the house. And you can imagine what it was like in Jacob's household when there were four women in the house. But you know, we're told something very, very interesting about Isaac and Rebekah. When they didn't have children, Isaac didn't go out and get another wife. He said, that was kind of tough growing up in that household. I'll leave it for you to find the passage, but it says that Isaac prayed to God for his wife's barrenness to end. Now, little did he know that they were going to have twins, and those twins, Jacob and Esau, were going to be at each other, and there was going to be a lot of tension in the household, but at least he didn't go out and get a second wife. He prayed. And so what is going on here is there is competition going on as to who is going to be the inheritor. Who is going to be the one that is going to receive the Abrahamic blessing? And you can imagine that Hagar and Ishmael were definitely wanting to come out on top of this bickering, and for Sarah and Isaac not to do so. So, in chapter 21, verse 10, Sarah said to Abraham, "Cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, namely with Isaac." And you can imagine, Abraham is a little distraught here, so he disagreed with Sarah because of his great love for his son Ishmael. He figured, well, you know, can't all you people just get along? And so in verse 11, the matter was displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. But God has correction for both Abraham and for Sarah. In verses 12 and 13, God said that Sarah is right on this issue, but there is another issue that where she doesn't have the whole picture. So in verses 12 and 13, "But God said to Abram, do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice, for in Isaac your seed shall be called. Yet I also will make a nation of the son of the bondwoman because he is your seed." So what's going to happen is, no, they're not going to live together. They're not going to continue to be one unhappy family. But God has promised that he will bless Ishmael. He will follow through. And notice, this is part of how Abraham becomes a father of a multitude of nations, because God has said that Ishmael is indeed going to be a progenitor of a nation. And so, as a result, Ishmael and Hagar are sent away. Early in the morning, Abraham gave provisions to Hagar and Ishmael, sent them away, and they wandered out in the wilderness. So Abraham, verse 14, rose early in the morning, took bread and a skin of water. Putting it on her shoulder, he gave it and the boy to Hagar and sent her away. Then she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Now, something very interesting about the word Beersheba, it's going to receive its name actually in this passage. And Beer is a well of an oath. So it's going to be rather ironic that they're going to be without water and they're going to be right next to what's going to become a great well. And so in verse 15 and 16, water ran out. Ishmael stayed in the shade and Hagar refused to watch him die, but she cried out to the Lord. In verse 15, and the water in the skin was used up, and she placed the boy under one of the shrubs. Then she went and sat down across from him at a distance of about a bow shot, for she said to herself, let me not see the death of the boy. So she sat opposite him and lifted her voice and wept. She does seem like a little bit of a strange mother, in my opinion. But we won't take time to digress onto that. In verse 18, the Lord told Hagar to rejoin Ishmael and to hold him because he will become a great nation. God has made promises. He will keep them. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him with your hand, for I will make him a great nation. Then in verse 19, God opened her eyes. He let her see that they were right next to a great well, so she gave Ishmael a drink. God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. Verses 20 and 21, God was with Ishmael, who became a hunter in the wilderness of Paran, and Hagar found him an Egyptian wife. Verses 20 and 21, God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. So he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Now, something that's really fascinating here in this passage, if we spend a little bit of time with verse 17, go back up in your notes. Who is the angel of the Lord? That is a major question in the Old Testament. And I have to tell you, the rabbis had an interesting set of arguments. I mean, it's a fascinating thing that they would tend to say on passages where they couldn't figure out if it was an angel or if it was God, all the rabbis in the first century could agree that the Memra did it. But what's the Memra? Some rabbis said the Memra is God, and others said that the Memra is the agent of God. This passage is a fascinating one. We'll come back to that argument. But if we compare Genesis 16:7, verse 9, verse 10, and 11 with Genesis 16:3, what we find out is that the angel of the Lord is the Lord himself. What's happening is she has a conversation with the angel of the Lord. Back there in that passage, but then she turned to speak with the Lord who had been speaking with her. Angel of Yahweh equals the Lord himself. Now, I said that there was that little argument that preoccupied all the rabbis about the time of Christ. And let's think about John 1:1. And by the way, we've got a box of Gospels of John. Do avail yourself of them. Use them. That's the book for the unbeliever. So don't be bookkeepers. Take them and give them away. But remember John 1:1. In the beginning was the Memra. Memra means the Word. Now, our Greek text has halagos. But halagos is a translation of Memra. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And what John 1:1 is saying is that Jesus Christ is the agent of God who is God. A very fascinating thing. And so the rabbis said it either has to be an agent of God or it has to be God. And what John tells us is one and the same. So I would take it Jesus Christ is the one who spoke to Hagar. Now, for the way that Jesus Christ is making provision for Hagar and for Ishmael, I would strongly urge they were believers. Now we'll go to chapter 26. And here we have the blessing of Isaac. I've spent more time with Ishmael because I think we're probably less familiar with God blessing Ishmael and Hagar than we are of his blessing of Abraham and Isaac. But in chapter 26, Isaac went to Abimelech, and that's not a person's name. It means my father is king, and it was a term that was used in that region for kings. Every king there in the country would be able to say, well, my father is king, my father is king, my father was king, my grandfather, my great-grandfather. Yeah, you keep going back. And so it was a title that was equivalent to he's king by right of birth. He wasn't a king who usurped the throne. And so in Genesis chapter 26, 1, it says, there was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abram. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines in Gerar. And in verses 2 through 3a, God said, don't keep going south. Don't go all the way to Egypt. Stay here. Because actually, he is in part of the land that, according to Genesis 15, was the land that, when God would fulfill his promises, was part of the land that God had promised to Abraham. So verses 2 through 3a, then the Lord appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land of which I shall tell you. Dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your seed I give all these lands. But we run into a little bit of a problem here within this passage. And the problem comes up in verse 5. Notice that word because. Now, I maintain that the Abrahamic covenant is unconditional. But we look at because and we say, is it really unconditional? You better believe it is. What I would say here is anything too wonderful for the Lord? Absolutely not. The solution that we're going to see in this passage is not that the Abrahamic covenant is conditional. It is not. But God had made certain promises to Abraham, and what happens now is he says, because Abraham was faithful, guess what I'm doing for you, Isaac? I'm giving you even more than I had promised to Abraham. In other words, the fundamental Abrahamic covenant is unconditional. But can God decide that he's going to bless someone more than he said he was going to bless them? Absolutely. God would have blessed Abraham the way that he promised he would bless Abraham, even if Abraham had not been obedient. But because Abraham was obedient, God tells Isaac, I'm giving you even more than I promised to Abraham. So now let's look at it within that. In verses 3b through 4, what happens is there's actually an extension of the Abrahamic covenant. I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father, and I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your seed all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. This is a reiteration of Genesis chapter 12. But in verse 5, he actually extends the promise. And it is based on the extension. The expansion of it is based upon Abraham's obedience. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, and my statutes and my laws. There's actually there are passages that explain, and unfortunately, as I was excerpting these notes out of another set of notes, I left out some of those passages, and I don't remember offhand where to turn. But what I am maintaining is that verse 5 is not saying that the Abrahamic covenant is conditional, but rather what happens is God expanded the terms of the contract beyond what he had promised to Abraham. So what we have seen is God has blessed Isaac and God has blessed Ishmael. The way that he blessed was according to how he had promised, although God is free to do more than he promised. God is not free to do less than he promised, but he is free to do more than he promised. God is faithful. And the way he's going to keep the promises that he has made to us, Jesus Christ has guaranteed everyone who believes in him for everlasting life to be resurrected and to be with him forever. And we have a God who keeps his promises. Amen.